bread doesn't count as a cooked
book. Okay, good. So this is a quick review of yesterday, or at least of the points from yesterday which are relevant for today, which is that the Rambam's theory, his major theory about when you say Allah and when you say Leh, is very simple. Is that in every mitzvah you have the command. There's a mitzvah, which is a command given to whoever. And then there's the action being performed by whoever. Okay, and if there's a matchup between the commandment and the action being performed, then you say leh. Okay, so for instance, there's a commandment for a father to circumcise his son. And if the father circumcises his son, so then that's a match. And he could say, God who commanded us to circumcise, to do this action. So in other words, there's a direct, this is, you're acting exactly in line with what was the command. So then you could say, leh, because you're saying this action is actually what was commanded. But if, for instance, the moel, an agent, does the milah, so then you can, then you have the action, the commandment was, you commanded fathers to do milah. And now, this stranger is doing milah. Now, it's true, it works because of halachic principle. But you can't imply, like, God who commanded us to do milah, and then this guy does it. Because that wasn't what the command is. So then you have to say al. So you say, who commanded us on the institution of milah, and this is an institution, because of the halachic system, this is an expression of that institution. But le is only where there's a direct matchup between the commandment and the action. And the action being performed. Okay, that's the Rambam's basic theory. Okay, that's Rambam's basic theory. Yeah, okay, now, we did yesterday also, I mean, if you listen to yesterday's, but how it works out, how this theory works out when you have one person doing an action on behalf of a group. Okay, and why it matters if it's a chova or an chova. But for the time being, let's leave that out. Okay, the time being, we can leave that out. I don't think it's going to be relevant for today, so let's move along. But it would be probably a good idea. Hopefully we'll get those online if you listen to that. Okay, so now we're up to like this. So that's the basic principle, and that explains the first four halachos. But now we have these exceptions, and we have to figure out how the exceptions fit into the Rambam's theory. So there are three exceptions. Okay, the first one is by lulav. So you take the lulav. If you take the lulav and then you're going to make a bracha, again, if you pick it up first and then subsequently make a bracha, so then you say al. Okay, then you say al. Why? Because since you already fulfilled the mitzvah, so therefore you say al, which is a reference to the past. Okay? But if you pick it up first, I'm sorry, if you make the bracha first, then you can say lito, lamed, because that implies the future. Okay, and that basically says this is his rule. Whenever you make the bracha after you did the mitzvah without the bracha, so then you say al. Okay, then you say al. Okay, so that just sounds like, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, that's like we've been doing all along, is that it's true that you want to say leh when you do the mitzvah for yourself, because leh is, it means this is exactly what you're commanded in. But the problem is that leh has an implication of future, and therefore he simply can't say future if it's in the past. So even though really the shavach would be better if we could make it specific and show that it's exact, not just generic on the institution, but this is exactly what was commanded. But the semantics don't allow for it. Because see, leh means the basic rule is for leh, but there are semantics. Since le and al are words, they're semantics of the words. And I think that's basically the problem with these exceptions, is like where the semantics of the words don't quite allow for the rule to take hold. Okay, there's like a semantic of tense, of the past and future, so therefore even though the rule should apply that you'll say le on lulav, because you are doing it for yourself, but the problem is the semantic of the future implies that it implies the future. And if you're doing it in the past, if you're doing it after the mitzvah, simply you can't use that language. So it would be better, but you simply can't do it. Okay, so that's the first exception. And it makes sense. I mean, there's another problem about the lulav, which we have to get to still. Why is it different than tzitzis? Because by tzitzis, remember, even though you do it afterwards, you say leh. So that's a problem, which I guess we won't get to today, but it's a problem. Maybe we'll do that next. So maybe tomorrow.
Okay, good. Oh, not tomorrow. Yeah, I guess.
Okay, so that's the first exception. Second exception is like this. Aval netilas yadayim u'shchita. Okay, netilas yadayim u'shchita. So those are before you make the bracha before you wash your hands. You're doing it for yourself. Right? So in theory you should say, leh. But he says, no. Ho'el u'kidivrei ha'reshoshen, since they are like matters, optional matters, afil shecha la'atzma mevarach al ha'shchita. Ha'kitzei adam al tiyas adayim. So even if you do it for yourself, you have to say al. Because it's like matters of Rishos. It's like optional matters. So, the question is, what does he mean by that? What's the problem? And how is this different from the things which are not a chova? Right? Like, it's originally had a category of chova and not a chova, obligation and non-obligation. Like, he had, for instance, he called mezuzah to be not an obligation. Right? Because he says it's commander, it's like a resource, because you don't have to, it's like an obligation, it's like optional. Because you don't have to go buy a house. Just if you have a house, then you have to. But he's, he kind of said that's it's kind of like Rishos. But here he's saying, Shchita, apparently he's learning, is different than that. Slaughtering meat is different. That's really optional. You don't have to slaughter meat. You don't have to do it all. You don't have to wash your hands. You don't have to eat bread. Right? So he's saying those are optional, and therefore you can't say leh. So why not? What's this category, and why not? So here's a, let's just say, it's an interesting question. I mean, what do we mean when we say that, I mean, how do we say a bracha on shchita? Like, a shchita a mitzvah? Is it a commandment? So, it is one of the 613 commandments. Okay. Now, are we obligated to do it? No, not really. You're not obligated to do it. You don't have to do anything. You never have to do it. Right? I never did shchita. Anyone else ever did shchita? Right? You're not obligated to do it. It's just a halacha that meat is only kosher through shchita. Right? Meat is only kosher. Shchita is that institution which makes meat kosher. Okay? And the only institution that makes meat kosher. Okay, so it's a halacha. I think the Rav had a thing that a mitzvah doesn't necessarily mean that something you must do. But it's like a halachic institution. He called it like a machshir. Makes it kosher. Something which makes it kosher, which prepares the item. That's a halachic institution, which is the Torah posits. And that institution is a mitzvah. Not every mitzvah means you have to do something. Okay, there are a lot of mitzvahs that aren't exactly like obligations. Like the rules of transactions, I think, is a mitzvah. I mean, there are things like that. I'm not sure exactly that. But the rule of tumah, a certain tumah is a mitzvah. So a mitzvah, it could be a halachic institution, could be a mitzvah. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to do anything. So so how do you make a bracha on it? Because he did command us in the institution. Apparently, I mean, that there is you do say a bracha on that. So even though I'm not obligated to do anything, but when I do it, it's not just an activity of it's not really divrei rishos. It's not really just it's not my own personal thing. I'm involved in the halachic system, I'm involved in the halachic institution, and as such, before I do it, I have to express that this is a halachic institution which I'm involving myself in. It's not an ordinary action; it's an action of mitzvah. So it is an action of mitzvah. It's a bracha mitzvah. You say a bracha on it. It's not really just like my own personal. I'm not just killing an animal. I'm involved in shchita, and I give shavach praise on the fact that I'm involved in this activity which God gave me. So it is a halachic action. So you could ask, what does it all mean? It's kedivrei rishos. It's like matters of optional matters. It's not really like optional matters. It's not true. This is an institution, and I'm involving myself in the institution. And for instance, netilas yadayim is a halachic institution that I have to wash my hands. And if I'm washing my hands for myself, right? So in theory, so I don't have to wash my hands. I don't want any bread. I don't have to. But if I do, then why don't you say I can make a bracha? I should check so and so on. Ulin tol hayadayim to wash. You command us to wash. Now does that mean I am obligated? No. But whatever the mitzvah means. This is an institution that we're commanded to be involved with. So this is the way our hands become pure. So what's the problem?
What do you mean it's like Rosh Hashanah? It's not. It's not really like Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is optional. If I eat cheese, that's Rosh Hashanah. That's an optional thing. There's no halachic value. But this is a halachic activity. In fact, we're making a bracha on it.
I mean, my question is, like, I don't exactly get this, because I guess what we said is the idea of Leah means what you're saying is, like, you God commanded us, and through the mitzvahs, to do so-and-so. And there's a command, and then there's the action. And if the action matches up with what the command is, then you could say Leah. Because this action is that which was commanded. Right? If it's not, if I'm the Moel or someone else, then that's not what was commanded. Now, there are different kinds of commands. There are commands which are calls to act. Chova, you must put on tefillin. And then, in order to match up with it, you must be the one to whom the command was given. And then there are commands which are institutions. Okay? Commands which are an institution. It's a different type of a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah which is an institution. Shchita, tzidayim. And now, if you want to say that the action, for the action to match up with the command, I'd say that you're simply participating in the institution, as was designed. And so, because the rule isn't just that you were obligated. I mean, the idea is, if you're saying Asher Kedushanu V'Sosu V'Tzivanu Leah, so what you're saying is that God commanded us in His commandments to do so and so. So, depending on the nature of the mitzvah, I'd say to be so. When the mitzvah is an obligation, so you have to be the person who is obligated because that's the way we'll match up with the command. But if the command is a command not to act, but it's simply an institution, so then I say, now you're doing this action. So in other words, when it's God commanded us to do shechita, it means that we should do, the shechita should be the manner in which, that it should be the action which makes our meat kosher, and I'm involved in that thing now. So God commanded me, but it doesn't mean that I have to do shechita, that's not what I mean, it's just the nature of what the mitzvah is. And I'm involved in the mitzvah exactly as it was designed. So the svara, based on what we were saying yesterday, it's not just an intrinsic rule, like obligation. It's an idea of that you're giving shebach on the institution. You have to be involved in the institution as it was given in order to give for to say the let. If you're involved in some like derivative form of the institution, then you can't say let because that isn't exactly the way the institution was given. So here you should be able to say let. The other question, which I think they were in there answering well, but the other question which could be asked here is, what is the difference between shechita, let's say, and mezuzah? Because he's saying in both of them you're not obligated to do it. He calls mezuzah, you're not obligated to buy a house and get a mezuzah, just like you're not obligated to buy meat to slaughter it. So in both of them they're optional. So why don't you say that they're both out? What do you mean? Why does he call one of them like kamin rishus or whatever? And the other one, he's like, Kedivrei Rishos, or whatever. What's the difference between these two things? So I think the point is clear, is that, see, in mezuzah, you don't have to buy a house. But given that you do have a house, and you're living in a house, the ownership of a house, or however it works out in mezuzah, is mechayev you, creates, obligates you to put up a mezuzah. So there is an obligation. It's true that you didn't have to bring about the obligation. The obligation is dependent upon a condition. But there is an obligation once the condition exists. And given the condition, there's an obligation. As opposed to, let's say, lulav, it's an intrinsic obligation. It's not dependent on a condition. But this is a mezuzah, is an obligation which is dependent on a condition. But in shechita, there is simply no obligation. There's no condition. It's not pshat that a condition is, if I want meat, then that obligates me. That's not true, because I could want meat, and then I could just buy some from the butcher store, which happened to have shechita done to it, but there's no time anyone is ever obligated in ever doing shechita. There's no such thing like that. You never have to do it. No one has to do shechita. There's no obligation like that. So there's no mechayev even. By mezuzah, the living in a house is mechayev. It creates an obligation. But by shechita, there simply is no obligation. It's just an institution which is a machshir, which makes me kosher. But there's no obligation. So that's what I mean. It is a different category. But still, my question stands. I mean, I'm just saying that I think that's it's important to differentiate between those two things. Different categories. Yeah, no, you're right. By shechita, by karbanos, you do say, the Ram has that. You say lishchat. By karban, karban pesach, or whatever, by chagiga, where you're obligated to bring the karban and to slaughter it, then you do say le, because then you are obligated. Right. Correct.
But when you're talking about a regular shechita on just a piece of meat, so then there's no obligation, right? So yeah, there are. Falsely I said that there's never an obligation to slaughter. But that's an idea of kachim of a karbon. That's a step in bringing a sacrifice. But I'm talking about just slaughtering regular plain old meat to make it kosher. There's no obligation ever to slaughter meat to make it kosher. Okay, so I think like what Randy's saying is that the, according to the Rambam, you're right, in theory, intrinsically, really, it's true. You should say lay on these things. But the, like, this halacha of exceptions is that, see, the Rambam's concerned about the semantics. Okay, and that's like the al and the le. Which is that the intrinsic rule is when this is the obligation, there's a match between the ma'isa and the command, then you say le, and when there's a not, then you say al. But the problem is that in a bracha, there's a semantic that you're concerned about. And just like le implies future, and therefore you can't say that because it implies a wrong implication, I'd say if you say, if translated, it means who commanded us, Asher Kishanu Mitzvoso, and commanded us to slaughter. There's an implication there of a command to act, right? That we're obligated, we're commanded to act. Now, it's true in the conceptual framework of mitzvos, there's a difference, and what we mean when we say the mitzvah of shechita, we don't mean a command to act, we just mean it's an institution, and you're involved in the institution, and that's all good theoretically. But the problem is that in bracha you're dealing with expressing in words the shavach, and in doing praise, and in doing so you have to go with the semantics of the words. And if you say that God commanded us to slaughter, it's not really true. He didn't command us to slaughter.
Well, you kind of you'll force say, the language to say that.
What?
You're forcing the language,
right. So it's true in a conceptual sense. Well, what do we mean by commandment? Well, there are two kinds of commandments. So I mean in the sense of this kind of commandment, he commanded us to slaughter. And it's true. And my question is, it's true. In the abstract, it is true. But that's not the realm of bracha. Bracha is the realm of formulating in words an expression of praise. And it's not the time to start getting involved in a whole shiur about the abstract nature of commandments, and I mean there's a semantic involved in the thing. So therefore, it's there's a reality. That's why I'm setting down the conceptual rule of bracha, but and that's the true. But in Tzavavi, he's telling you, but that you're limited by the semantics. Whenever you use a word le or al, there are accidental semantical implications which have to be maintained. And you can't say a bracha which has the wrong implications. So le implies the future. That's the breaks. It just does. And le implies a commandment. It's commanded us to act implies like a real commandment. Not just a conceptual command or whatever. It implies a demand to act. So like mezuzah, you could say that because once I have a house, I am commanded to act. But to have something where it's totally optional, there's no command, there's never a command to act, I'm doing something which is totally an optional thing. I could have told it's kedivrei rishos. It means I could have just as well said, you know what, I'm not interested in doing shechita. I'm just doing shechita now. So it's totally at my own free will. I'm deciding, you know what, I want to slaughter an animal now. You don't want to? Okay, don't. Who cares? No one cares. But you can't say by a mezuzah. I mean, I have a house in my house. You can't say if I want, I could not. Yeah, if you want, I could sell my house, but that's a whole different situation. But there, given that I'm living in my house, I have to put up a mezuzah. So now you could say, you commanded us to do this. But in Shechita, you have no choice but to say who commanded us on the institution of Shechita. And yet, within that institution, I'm involved in that institution. Okay, I mean, the Rambam is different, I guess that you pointed out yesterday, is different than other positions. He's very concerned about the words and the bracha and the semantics of what's being said. Even in his rule itself, his basic rule is not trying to teach any abstract things. Right. It's kind of just in line with who commanded us to do this. If this is the command, then you can do it. If this isn't the command, you can't say le. So, I mean, the Rambam is saying is like a bracha is an enunciation of praise, which is uses language, and you're formulating an expression of praise, and it has to be accurate. And his main concern is accuracy. He's not involved like other shonim on teaching you the nature of the mitzvah or the kiyum, what the role of the action is, or teaching you the kedusha of the mitzvah. The Rambam is just plain going by it has to be an accurate expression of shavach. And shavach praise, when you talk to God or talk about God, you have to be clear and true, and all the implications have to be correct. So that's the main fact. That's the main consideration. That's his main way of looking at this thing, as opposed to other Rishonim. I mean, of course, other Rishonim don't allow for falsehoods, right? But I mean, That's not the main idea and the main determinant. According to the Rambam, the main determinant is accurately expressing the praise of the nature of what's going on here. That's the question, is what about Kisadan? Covering the blood, because once you slaughter a chicken or a wild animal, a chayarof, you're obligated absolutely to cover the blood. It's an absolute obligation. So why does he just throw in Kisadan? It's funny, at first he doesn't, then he does. But it seems to be is that really should be like a mezuzah. Once you have a house, you're obligated to put a mezuzah. Once you slaughter, you're obligated to do kizai. Obligated to cover the blood. Let's leave that problem. We can think about it. It's a good question. Let's leave it. Ken asked a good question. What do you mean to feel shachalatz if you slaughter for yourself? What does it even mean slaughtering for yourself? I mean, slaughtering is not for anybody. Slaughtering just makes the meat kosher. Who's going to eat it later is like has nothing to do with it. So I mean, I would have said if you wanted to say that you'd say le on shlita, it's because you're involved in the institution of shlita. But it's an institution, and le means we're doing exactly what the institution is. The institution isn't for anybody, so who cares if it's for you or for anyone else? I mean, the Havmina would seem to be whatever. It doesn't, you know. But let's say what I'm just saying. Unless you just say, I mean, you could say this. I don't know, maybe there's something deeper to it. But you could just say on a practical level, the Rambam's rule is if you do a mitzvah for yourself, then it's leh. And if you do it for somebody else, he's saying is then by shlita, even if you do it for yourself, it breaks the rule. It doesn't matter. Not that there's like a conceptual, they're just talking, showing you, even in the rule, his rule, according to the simple rule, the only svara is, he'll say, I'm slaughtering for myself. He says, it doesn't matter, even if you do.
Because we don't say that there's an idea of for yourself.
Yeah, there's no idea for yourself. I mean, that's kind of the reason, that's kind of the idea, is that there is no such thing as for yourself, because it's really an institution, there's no obligation, it's not like,
right.
There's no for yourself. So even if practically you're doing it for yourself, it doesn't have any halachic reality, you're just making me kosher, because that's the institution, there's no obligation, there's no... Could be that's what he means. Yeah, by the way, I mean, we're going to have to get back to it by Erev. Remember yesterday we said Erev is a chova. You know, but we kind of, and that's why the chiv trickles down, you know, is on every individual, is on the, he says nachova. Sorry, it's nachova. Right? That doesn't trickle down because there's no obligation to put an Erev. You don't want to carry, you don't have to do it. So by that logic, it would seem to be that it should be in the category of shchita. And you shouldn't say, al. The reason why you'd say al should not be because it's not on you, but it's on the group. It should have just been because it's the Vereshos. You know, it should fit into the the Shlita category. But it seems like it doesn't. It seems like it really is the Enochova category. You know, where there is some sort of a Chiyuv Sara. In which case, maybe it should be back to the case where there's a Chova, and therefore it should trickle down to you as an individual. And I'm saying we have to get into Erev a little bit, if you sense what I'm getting at. But we have to figure out which Erev he's talking about. And again, I wanted to, at some point, I'd like to digress and get into Erev and look at the halachas by Erev and see exactly how these things are set up. Okay, so I'm just mentioning, it's not so simple, the Erev thing. Okay, so now we're moving to Chametz, the third exception. Okay, the third exception is somewhat difficult. Okay, the first problem with it is that it seems to be very similar to the first exception and therefore should have been grouped together with the first one. The whole structure of this halacha, if you try to read it, is very funny.
You just say the...
Yeah, I'm going to say it. Yeah. So the third exception is... You mean the third exception, right? Yeah. The third exception says like this, is that when you search for chametz, so you make a bracha on the searching. Okay, and the bracha is on biur chametz. Biur means removing chametz, but this is the action of you're going to search it and remove it. So you make the bracha, the mitzvah. It's before you do the bedikas chametz, before you search, you say a bracha. You are obligated, it's your house, it's your obligation, you're doing it for yourself. It's an obligation, if you have chametz in your house, you're obligated to do it. So therefore you should say leh. But you don't, you say al. Okay? So that's the problem, why do you say al? Okay, and that's our Gemara. That's al, this is where we started, way back when, right? Al. That's what the Gemara concludes. So why al? So the Rambam says the reason why is it says Shemei Eis Shegamar Belibo Levatel, because at the moment that you conclude in your mind to nullify the chametz, Naaseh Mitzvah Sabir, then you fulfill the mitzvah of destroying, removing. Kodem Sheivdok. Before you search it out, Kamoshi is barim koma, like I explained in this place. He's saying is because before you do the bedika, you have already concluded in your mind to nullify the chametz, and then you've fulfilled the mitzvah, and therefore, when you do the bedika, you've already done the mitzvah. Okay, and therefore what?
Therefore it's a past future thing.
You think it's a past future thing. So if that's the case, it's really the same thing as lulav, which you always set down a rule that whenever you make a, do the mitzvah bracha after the action, you have to say al. So if it's really the exact same thing as past future, then it's lulav. He already set that down, the first exception. And only then he separates them. He says the lulav exception, then he says this thing about shechita, which is optional stuff, and then he says this one. That's a funny way to do it. Now, it's not exactly it's the same as lulav, though, on a very simple level, because you don't make a bracha. We have to get into all together. What is he saying? When did you fulfill the mitzvah? You're about to do bedikas chametz, right? Now, you didn't do bittel. Bittel is what we say, bittel, right? You know, kol chamir v'chamia, all the chametz that's in my property, I nullify. We do that after the bedika. Okay? And the Rambam also did that after the bedika. Okay? Before, so what he's saying, he says, but, yeah, but when you do bedika, the searching, it's like, before that, you, in your mind, conclude that you basically don't want your chametz anymore. And in doing so, you've already fulfilled your mitzvah. And now you do the bedikah, you already fulfilled the mitzvah, right? But what are you making the bracha on? Do you make, upon what is the bracha going? Right? Not on thinking that I'm destroying chametz, right? You don't have brachas on thinking. Bracha is going on the action. Which action? Action of bedikah, of searching. And I didn't do that yet. See, in lulav, I already did it. I already picked it up. But here, the bracha is going on the action of searching. So it's not like I already did it. I didn't already do it. So I'm already fulfilled the mitzvah. Okay, whatever. But bottom line is, there's a mitzvah for the bedikah. Mishum in haTorah, I've already done the mitzvah, let's say. I've already fulfilled it in the Torah. But, yeah, but midrabanan, there's a mitzvah to do bedikah. And I'm obligated to search. So therefore, isn't that what I'm making the bracha on? So since I'm making the bracha on the mitzvah of Darabanan to search, right, you make brachas on Darabanan, so I'm making on Darabanan to search. So if that's the case, so why don't I say leh? It's in the future. So what's he even talking about, really? So to figure this out, I think we have to look. I mean, he's kind of telling you, the Rambam doesn't do this often, but he says, like I explained, in its place. So I think when he tells you that, you got to look in the place. Okay? I mean, in general, Rashi does that. I mean, if Rishonim will tell you, like I explained, or it will explain, or the Gemara, Rashi tells you and the Gemara will explain, you gotta look there, because that means they're saying you can't understand this unless you look over there. And that's really, you know, so you gotta look over there. Okay? So let's look over there. Okay, so again, we're Hilchos Chametz V'Matzah Perek Beis. Okay? So, he starts off by saying in Halacha Aleph, there's a positive commandment in the Torah, the hashpis achametz kodem zman esrachilaso, to cause a cessation of chametz before the time that you're not allowed to eat it. Okay, I'm jumping to halacha beis. Umahi hashpasa zu amar b'Torah. What does that mean? What does that mean? Cause a cessation? Again, I'm defining it loosely, but what does that mean, hashpasa? I really say the mitzvah is to be mashpis the chametz before, right? What does it mean? So Ram says, what does it mean to be mashpis? What does that mean? Literally, it means to cease, to rest, cause the chametz to rest. So what does that mean? What does the Torah mean? The Rambam asks. It's a mitzvah to say in the Torah, a positive commandment in the Torah. What do I have to do? He she yivatel hachametz milibo, that you nullify the chametz from your heart, v'yachshav oso ke'afar, and you consider it like dust. V'yasim b'libo she'en chavrishu chametz k'klal, and you have in, you put in your, to your mind that there's no chametz in your possession at all. And v'shakol chametz shebrishuso, and any chametz which is in your house, in your dwellings, are you ke'afar? It's like dust. In your mind, it's like dust. It has no purpose whatsoever. Okay, so it's like an internal attitude of removal, absolute removal, and devaluation of any chametz. So chametz is like, that's what it means. It's really you breaking your relationship to chametz. It's not actually to destroy it, but it's to internally to be totally removed remove yourself from any chametz whatsoever. It's all like nothing. Okay, you could really, in terms of this halacha, in theory, you could have chametz in your house all you want. But it's like internally you have, I mean, you can't be fooling anybody. But if internally the chametz is basically like dust, and you relate to it like totally it's prohibited and it's dust and it has total no worth whatsoever, in theory you've filled the mitzvah. Right? But that's a very nice thing theoretically, but people aren't like that. And practically, if you're having chametz in your house, probably you're going to end up being valuing it and relating to it. So the Gaon continued, in the Devar Sofrim, the Rabbanon set up, l'chapes acher chametz, b'machavos v'chorin, to search after the chametz which are in all these different places. The livdok, v'lehotzio mikol gvul, and to search them out and to remove them from your possessions, from your territory. Okay? Also, this is when you do it at night, and that's what we do, right? So this halacha midrabanan, again, the Torah, the mitzvah is totally fulfilled in your mind. In your mind, it's total breaking your relationship to chametz. But midrabanan, and you can see why, is the guy's not going to really do this well, and if he doesn't do well, he's going to violate the deraisa of owning chametz on Pesach. So therefore, the rabbanan said that you're obligated to search it out, and destroy it. Okay.
Actual question.
By the way, it is interesting, the bracha that we say is al bir chametz, not al bedikas chametz. Bir is removal, and on the removal of chametz, not on searching out chametz. Which is interesting, because why is that? Okay, so let's see what happens. So now there's another halacha. Okay, now look at this in Perek Gimel Halacha Zayin. He says, kishe gomer livdok, when you complete your bedika, in Bazi Blil Arbas or Biyam Arbas or Kodon Sheshot, Tzorech Levatel Kol Chomet Shesh Rishuso Vein Roheo. So after you finish doing Bedika, you nullify all the Chomets that's in your Rishas. That's in your property that you didn't see. V'yomar, and you say, Kol Chomet Shesh, all the Chomets that's in my property that I saw and that I didn't see and I don't know about is Batel, is negated, and it's like dust. So when are you doing that?
Afterwards,
right? Afterwards. So the bitl you're really doing afterwards.
Yep.
So what's what I'm saying is you're doing beforewards, right? You know, you do afterwards, right? I mean, he says, but he's saying is, also say, you don't, he's not, but I'm not talking about what you say. I mean, it's true. He says that when you do bedika, it's because you think, right? Because you, the moment, right? That's what I'm said before. It's like, when you do the bedika, you really fulfill it. The time that you have in your mind to do betel, to nullify it, then you fill the mitzvah. So, who said, first of all, you had in mind to do betel? Right? Is there a mitzvah? Does it say anywhere here in the Rambam that you're supposed to have in mind to do betel and you do and you search it out? And if you already did have this in mind, then you're ready to fill the mitzvah, so then why are you doing betel again afterwards? Are you doing two betels? There's the internal betel, which negation, which takes place before you search, then you search, and then you say bitl again. I mean, what's that accomplishing? And then look at halacha ches. Lefikach im lo bitl kodem sheish. Right? Basically, so I'm sorry. He says, but you can't basically, you can't be mevatel. After the sixth hour, you can't. It's too late. Okay, after the sixth hour, Torah put it into your property, and it's irrevocable. For whatever reason. Let's take that as an axiom for now. So he says, therefore, if you did not negate it after the sixth hour, and after that you find chametz that your mind is on and is in your heart, you like it, you're happy about it. If you find it and it's nothing, then it's nothing. But if you find chametz, and if you didn't do bitl, again, if you did not openly, expressly state this bitl, you didn't say all the chametz which is in my house is nullified, you didn't say that, and then you happen to find something, and you, after the words like on Pesach or whatever, and you like it, and your mind is on it, you really relate to it not as dust, but as real chametz, then, ushacho b'shas ha-bir v'lo bir, and you didn't get rid of it, ha'iz over, alo yirov, alo yimatzai, because then you violate the prohibition of owning chametz on Pesach, sh'ha'i lo bir, because you didn't remove it, v'lo bitel, and you didn't nullify it, right, you never nullified it. So, right, so he says, if you find chametz on Pesach, if you did not expressly nullify it, then if you find it, then you got problems. Because you never removed it, you never nullified it, and therefore you're going to violate the prohibition of owning it. But what do you mean? But didn't the Rambam say that you nullified and you filled the mitzvah right before you did the bedika automatically? But you see, it's not true. You see, the bittul later is really doing something. You're accomplishing something by expressly. The real bittul is when you say bittul, when you actually express it. Not when you think it. Well, I mean, well, he's making up. It's like, the Rambam's like kind of playing a fast one on it. He's like, he's telling you, oh, because you already filled the mitzvah when you thought that right before you did the bittul, the searching. He doesn't say anything about this thinking part in Hilchos Chametz Matzah. He says, like I explained over there. Where? He doesn't explain it. On the contrary, it seems like you don't. It seems like the bittul takes place afterwards. Right? It sounds like the bittul's taking place later. And if things are nice later, then you should make the bracha before the bittul, before the bedika, and say le. But you don't. You say you can't say le because you already fulfilled the mitzvah. If you fulfilled the mitzvah, then it means you already did bittul in your head somehow. Fine, so why are you saying it explicitly? And why, if you didn't say it explicitly, then you violate? And even if you did say it explicitly, so still, then what? Then if you find something, then and you like it, then you don't violate, because apparently once you already did bittul, that's it. Bittul's bittul. Once you did bittul, you can't undo the bittul. But if the Rambam's saying is you already did this bittul in your head internally, so then how could you undo it there? Okay, so this is difficult, right? These are difficulties here. The difficulties are, if you want to look at this, I mean, I think we should leave with these difficulties. These are good ones. So I think we should leave with, and also, what's this third exception, right? I mean, this is the third exception. But in order to understand it, I think we have to understand what's going on here. And then we can see why it's another exception or whatever, and why it's not the same exception as the lulav and whatever, you know. So again, I'd say you got to look again at, in the parak 2, halachos 2 and 3, right? At the beginning of 3. And then parak 3, halachos 7 and 8. Okay, the parts of which we read, but I mean, that's basically where the problems are. I'm just filling in on some facts. So I think the deal is I think this is the way it goes, is that I'm not sure how much of these are relevant, but they're just worth giving you them. There's a Gemara in Pesach, maybe some of you guys have done this. It says that if you do Bedika, you're still obligated to do Betel. Why? And this is the one I was basing it on. You did Bedika, you already searched everything out, you made sure there's nothing there, right? Right? You could assume there's nothing there, you searched, so says you still have to do Betel. Midrabanan, because maybe on Chum Pesach you're going to find something and you're going to want it, and then when you want it, right at that moment it's you. It's like you own it, and therefore you violate the prohibition of owning chametz. He says, but if you do bittul first before Pesach, then even if you want it, it's too late already. You already did bittul, so therefore the Rabbanan set up that you should, that even if you search it out, you have to do bittul. And likewise, I think they say, so if you do bittul, why do you have to search it out? Right, so they say, because then you're not going to violate the owning chametz, because he already negated it. He says, no, but then you may find something and you may eat it. You may find something good, so even though you're not going to own it because you already nullified it, but it maybe you find a good piece and then maybe you can eat it. So therefore, the Rabbanan said that you have to search out everything that you could possibly find, try to destroy that. But then, still you may find something and then want it and then violate, so then you have to do bittul also. I mean, I guess there's no way for them to stop that maybe you're going to find it and eat it. And, you know, then only so much they could do. David is asking why, if you were the first way, if you do bedika, and then you turn, then you find, so you did bedika, then you find something, says maybe you're going to want it, and then violate. What he says is the fact that it was there the whole time, you were in violation the whole time. Why you only violate if you want it?
Because you didn't do bittul, right. It was still in your chest.
Right, that's a good question. Right. Right. Okay, that's a good question. Let's leave that question. That's another question. I mean, I think it's related to all these things, but right. You're right. Okay?